In the opening pasuk in Parshas Noach, the Torah tells us that Noach was a tzaddik in his generation, b'doroi sof. So Rashi quotes a machlokes Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish from the end of Gemara Sanhedrin, Perek Chelek. What is the meaning of b'doroi sof? Does it mean that if he would have lived in the generation of Avraham Avinu, he would have been a greater tzaddik because he would have had support from Avraham Avinu? Or does it mean that only in his generation he was considered a tzaddik? If he would have lived in the generation of Avraham Avinu, lo haya nechshav l'klum. They quote from the Chazon Ish that he thinks they both agree, that both opinions both agree, that if he would have lived in a generation of Avraham Avinu, he himself would have been a greater tzaddik. He would have had support from Avraham Avinu. But the machlekes hamaraim is, what is the pasuk trying to imply over here? B'dora sub pasuk is yesh darshim l'shvach, yesh darshim l'gnai. Pasuk is trying to, they're both true. If he would have lived in a generation of Avraham Avinu, he would have been a great tzaddik himself. But he doesn't compare to Avraham Avinu. So the machlekes is, they're both correct. But the machlekes is, which of the two aspects is the pasuk driving at? Which is it trying to bring out the fact that he would have been greater, or he wouldn't have been great, as Avraham Avinu? Es alakim es alach Noach. Rashi quotes from the Medrash, this not a machlokes, this they both agree, that by Avraham Avinu it says, es alech lefanai v'heyei samim. Avraham Avinu was a pioneer, he went in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Noach had to hold on, HaKadosh Baruch Hu held on to him. Es alakim es alach, he walked along with him. I'm so late you get it on that there's a medrash that adds on, there's a third madrega. Achrei Hashem Malakech Lechu. The pasuk doesn't ask Bnei Yisrael to be pioneers, to go like Avraham Avinu, Hisalech Lefanai Beheyei Samim, to go ahead. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't ask us to go along with him. He just says, Achrei Hashem Malakech Mtelechu, follow the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. I'm so late you said he saw the three different levels of going with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When he would go with his grandchildren, sometimes he would walk to shul. So some of them were old enough to run in front of him, and some of them he had to hold on to their hand to walk with him, and others were schlepping along behind him. So the HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't expect us to run ahead of him, like he asked Avraham Avinu, Halech Lefanai. He doesn't expect of us that we should be as great as Noach. Either Noach was less, is not as great as Avraham Avinu, was a pioneer, he went ahead. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't expect of us that we should even be like Noach to go along with him. Achrei Hashem Malakechem Teilech, if we'll do that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be happy. The Parsha is telling us the story of the Mabul, to teach us that there is such a thing as Hashgacha. There are some philosophers who believe that God created the world, but God doesn't pay attention to what's happening afterwards. So we believe that there is Hashgacha, and there is Schar V'Yonesh, that Tzadikim are rewarded and the Rishoyim are punished. So that's the main theme of the Parsha. There were those who find it hard to believe that such a thing happened, that there isn't so much water in the whole wide world, that there should be 15 amas of water above the highest mountain in the world. The Chazal knew about a water cycle. There isn't so much water. There isn't unlimited amount of water. There's only so much water, it rains, and the water evaporates, goes back, comes down, goes back, comes down, goes back. There isn't so much water in the world. See, the answer is, this was a miracle. It's not a fable. This really happened. In the days of the Rashba, there were Jewish scholars who were so into Greek philosophy that they thought Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were not real people. They thought that these were just concepts. So he says, it's not so. We have a tradition that these were real people. When I was a young boy, before Bar Mitzvah, so they would ask at that time a riddle that the archaeologists were digging near the Nile River and they found the bones of seven cows. So they asked, are these the bones of the seven fat cows or the skinny cows? So the children who knew Chumash said, must be the bones from the skinny cows because the skinny cows swallowed the fat cows. So the correct answer is the whole thing was a dream and never happened. There were no bones. It can't be the archaeologists found the bones from the dream. Some things in Tanakh we know never happened. It never happened. It's not true. It was a dream. Other things we know did happen. The Mabel happened. There was a person, Noach, who got Misnoach, Ba'avo, Zachat, Vatifke David, Vayushua, Verachnim, and the davening, we speak about it. It's not a Baba Maisa. It's not a fable. And some things we're not too sure about the Oson of Bilam was talking. We're not sure. The Rambam thinks that it was a Mara HaNevuah. Some of the things the Ramban Achum is not so convinced about. Some things the Rambam says with Mara HaNevuah, the Ramban thinks maybe they really happened. So some things we know never happened, like the fat cows and the skinny cows. Some things we know that they certainly did happen. Noach was a person. Avram Yitzchak Yankov were not just concepts. They were real people. And some things we're not sure exactly what happened. Not only did HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroy all of mankind, it says he destroyed the behemoths as well, because the behemoths were also sinning. The behemoths were niskokim l'she'en aminam. How does that happen? Behemoths don't have seichel. Behemoths don't have b'chira chavshis. So the Pashtus is, like the Mesilas Yeshayim explains in Perek Aleph, he quotes a medrash on the pasuk in Koheles Reis, kamaisu helekim, that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Adam HaRishon last, first he created the whole world. Everything should be prepared. Hakol muchan l'suda. Then he created Adam HaRishon at the end. So the whole world was created. The tachlis of the Bria was that man should serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if man sins, he's mekalkal the whole world with him. So the Medrash in Koheles says, Re'ez kol ma'aseh alekim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Adam HaRishon. He showed him Miran Gan Eden and he said, you see all the beautiful trees and everything. I created everything on your behalf. Be careful not to sin. If you'll sin, you will destroy everything in the world. So that's because mankind sinned in the generation of the Mabul. That's why everything had to be destroyed. All the people had to be destroyed and all the behemoths in the earth, even the Gimel Tvochim of the Amek HaMachresha, everything had to be destroyed. Rashi points out on the Pasuk that HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructs, Rashi's quoting the Medrash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructs Noach to build the Teva. Why do he have to build the Teva? He's making anyway a miracle. So why do he have to work so hard? It took him 120 years to build the Teva. So Rashi quotes in the Medrash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to warn mankind that they should stop sinning. So he was building a Teva 120 years. When people asked him, why are you building a boat? So he said, because it's going to be a big bubble. And there was a lot of hasra in advance. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives a lot of hasra in advance. The Ralbag has an interesting comment on the pasuk. There was so much sexual depravity. There was so much behemoth when this kokam l'shein aminam. The world was so depraved and was so mekulkal. And Noach was an unusual tzaddik. He didn't marry until an older age. Everybody else was having children at a younger age, and he was an older person. He was marchik himself very much from all of this, as the pasuk describes. He was a tzaddik. He was a big tzaddik. After waiting 120 years that Noach was building a teva, then it says, Vahidu Shivasa Yamim, 7 days later, then the Mabul came. Why did I have to wait another 7 days? 120 years is not enough to wait. So the Medrash has different interpretations. So one interpretation in the Medrash, which is quoted by the Tosfos in Moed Katan, was, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a gemar din lemisa on mankind. So the Rebbeinu Shalom wanted to observe Shiva over mankind. So usually one observes Avelis after someone dies. But here, because the Gemar Din was already made, whenever the Bezin makes a Gemar Din, then the person is considered a Gavrik Thilo. So if one, the Mishnah says in Sanhedrin, if somebody's Nigmar Din Lemisa, and then someone else kills him, so he's not Chayv Misa, even though he didn't kill him l'shem Einish Bezin. He killed him because he doesn't like him. He's not Chayv Misa, he's considered a Gavrik Tilo. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu observed Shiva over the death of mankind because a Gemar Din was made. So then it's even his commentary on the Shiltas writes that that's basically what Chere Minidui is all about. If someone does an Avera, so Bezin makes a Gemar Din l'misa that he deserves to die. And if he dies, even if he dies 50 years later, we attribute the death to the Gemar Din, to the curse. Cherem and Anida is a curse that Bezin gives that a person should die. And we attribute the death to the curse that the Bezin gave, and we treat him like Haruge Bezin, that the din is that Haruge Bezin, Eim Esablim Aleihem. That's a Mishnah in Sanhedrin, because the Pasuk says, Bavod Rishayim Rino. When a Rasha dies, he's supposed to celebrate. So that's what it says in the Gemara, Mishameis bin Iduya, Bezin Soklim is Harono. It's a din in Yerideya, and the end of Yerideya, Hilchas Cherem and Nidui. Bezin Soklim is Harono. It doesn't mean you put a whole pile of stones, like Kigala Shalochan, in Sefer Yoshua, but it means he put a slab of stone on top of the Aron to demonstrate that this person really deserved Skila. And that's why the din is that they don't observe Avelus. So the din is when Bezin curses someone, they put him Cherem Anidui, since they made a Gemar Din Lemisa on him, so he had the Chachamim require, he should observe Avelus on himself. Because since he's the one who's responsible for the Bezin making the Gemar Din, so they required of him, he should usually, when a person dies, the surviving relatives observe Avelus on him. Here he didn't die yet. Here the Bezin just gave him a curse that he should die. So once there's a Gemar Din, they require that he should observe Avelus on himself. That's why the Dinim of Nidni and Cherem are very similar. They're not 100% identical, but they're very similar to the Dinim of Avelus. The Gemara Moed Kut in the third parak, Eile Megachin, discusses each detail of Hilchus Avelus. How many of the Dinim of Avelus carry over to Nidni and Cherem, and how many do not carry over? When the Mabul took place, the Pasuk says, Kolosha Nishmas Rachaim Biapa, Mikolosha Becharova Mesu. So the Gemara in the end of Yuma, the last paragraph, for all the first program in Yuma talk about Avodas Yom Kippurim, the Hakrovas Hakrabonis, and the last paragraph talks about the Hamisha Inuim, the aspects of Yom Kippur that are relevant today, that is not based on Migdash. So one of the major topics in the last parak is that not everybody can fast on Yom Kippur. If you have a suffix sakana, a svek svek of a sakana, so you're not allowed to fast. You have to eat on Yom Kippur. So the Gemara has the whole discussion. How do you know there's a din of pikuach nefesh that zecha kola tarkul? So we know that all the tanoim, each tana gave a different drosh. And one of the amoraim came up with the drosh. V'chai b'hem eloshi yomis b'hem. So the Gemara says that that drasha of the Amora is better than all the drashas of the Tanoim. That's the one that we basically accept. So the Gemara has a lot of dinim there, pikuach nefesh. So the Gemara says, what if someone, a building collapsed over people and on Shabbos, and if the people are still alive, you have to be mechal Shabbos, if there's a chance that by bringing them to the hospital or giving them oxygen or something, even if you have to be Mechal Shabbos, even if there's only a slim chance that you'd be able to save someone's life. So the Gemara says, you do Pikuach Hagal. Mefakchem Olam is Hagal. Maybe there's a, you don't know whether it's a Yisrael or a Nochri. You don't know if the Yisrael is alive or dead. So you have to be Mechal Shabbos to save someone's life. So let's say you are Mechal Shabbos by moving all the bricks and you see that there's a person there and he's not breathing. So is there a chance that he's still alive? So the Gemara learns that from this pasuk. Sounds as if they're learning after this pasuk, kolosh nishmas ruachaim biapov, that when a person is breathing, then he's alive. When he's not breathing, then he's not alive. Sounds from the Gemara as if they're learning out a din from the pasuk. So that's why in Yerideya there's a din that when a person is holding by the end, the person is a geisus, and then he stops breathing for 15-20 minutes, the Chevra Kaddish, you should bury him. You assume that he's dead and you bury him. So in the 1800s, some of the countries in Europe came to the realization that the doctors are signing death certificates for people who sometimes the doctors make a mistake and the people are still alive. So they're burying people alive. Once in a while, they have in the newspapers, they write up these funny things that someone was assumed to be dead and they were delivering a hesped in the church. And then in the middle of the hesped, the mace gets up and he says, what's going on? What are they delivering a eulogy? I'm still alive. Or the Rabbasi has a story that someone once went to the cemetery to visit the grave of a relative of his and someone else was buried the day before. And he's banging on, they buried him in a fancy ohel, and he's banging on the door, let me out of here, they buried me alive. I'm still alive. Let me get out of here. So once in a while, such a thing happens. So there are a few countries in Europe where they had these laws. They still have the laws now. You're not allowed to bury anyone until 72 hours go by after the doctor signed the death certificate. Maybe they made a mistake. So the Shaila was, in the Mishnayos, you have like that, in Mishnah in the end of Nida, that if a Zava or a Zava dies, he's still Mesupik, maybe he's still alive. There's some tumas that a Zava or a Zava have that a mace doesn't have. So if the Zav dies, he only has tumas mace. If he's still alive, he has tumas Ziva. So the Mishnah says, up until the time that the body starts to decompose, even though he's not breathing already for several hours, we act as if we're Mesupik, maybe he's still alive. Maybe he still has tuma like a Zav or a Zava. So the Maritz Chayis corresponded with the Chasam Sofer. They lived in the same generation. And he said, maybe we should adopt the position of the Goyish governments. Maybe it's Taka Sofik Sakonis Nefoshis. Maybe we should have adopted the position and go along with them that we shouldn't bury the Mason, even though there's a Pasuk Chumash Kavdik Brana Bayom Ahu. Supposed to bury the Mason before the Shkia Bayom Ahu. The Sullen Nevlosa means even if you don't bury on the same day before the Shkia, you shouldn't do Halonas HaMeis. Halonas HaMeis is you shouldn't wait till Halos HaShachar. The Chatchila should bury Bayom Ahu before Shkia. And if you can't do that, the Sullen Nevlosa shouldn't wait till Halos HaShachar. Aleis HeLineu L'Chvodo, that's what we do today. When usually when someone dies, their relatives live all over. So years ago, they had no telephone, they had no emails. But today you call up all the relatives and the friends and they'll come tomorrow if you postpone the funeral. So the day or two later, so more people will come to participate in the funeral. So the Mishnah says in Sanhedrin, even though there's an essay called Tikberna by Yamahu, and there's a lois essay, it's all in the Vlas till the morning, till Alos HaShachar, but Helene Lechvodo is Mutta. So that's what we usually do. Hardly anybody's buried on the same day. But over here, the Shaila was, Maritz Chai suggested to the Chasam Sofer, maybe you should adopt the position of the Goyish government, because you have the Mishnah and Nida has like that. And this Bryce and Oval Rabasi tells the story about the fellow came to the cemetery and one of the people who was just buried the day before was knocking on the gates, let me get out of here. They buried me alive, they locked me in. So you see that such a thing is possible. You see in the Gemara, such a thing is possible. And every so often they write about this in the National Enquirer, in the funny newspapers. They write the big headlines like that, that in the middle of the church services, the Galach was delivering a eulogy, and then the guy gets up and he said, well, are they eulogizing me? I'm still alive. So the Chasam Sofer responded to him, and all the tshuvas in the Chasam Sofer have the name of the person to whom the tshuva was sent. This is one of the few, I think there are less than five, or less than very few tshuvas, but he doesn't have the name. So he writes a very sharp attack against the Maritz Chayis. He says, are you an apikoros or something? You don't have amuna. What do you mean? We should do away with the pasuk and chumash. What are you, crazy? When the Rabban Shalom told Moshe Rabbeinu, kovetik b'renem ayam ahu, he must have told them, what's the siman? How do you know that a person is dead? So he must have told them if he stopped breathing for 15, 20 minutes. So the Chasam Sofer, when they printed, the tshuvas were printed after the Chasam Sofer passed away. So maybe he gave instructions or the children decided not going to put the name of the Maritz Chayis because they have other letters to the Maritz Chayis, but it has his name because he's not insulting there. But this tshuva, he insults him. He says, what's wrong with you? You are an apikoros. You don't believe in the fact that the Rabban Shalom must have told Moshe Rabbeinu what's the definition of death. But how do we know that this tshuva was sent to the Maritz Chayis? Because he was very proud of his correspondence with the Chasam Sofer. So he published a separate sefer, my correspondence with the Chasam Sofer. So he has his letter. Then he had the Maritz Chayis has his letter, and then he has the response of the Chasam Sofer. So you see, it's paragraph by paragraph. It corresponds to the letter that he sent them. So it's clear that this tshuva from the Chasam Sofer, printed in the tshuva Chasam Sofer, was sent to the Maritz Chayis. So it's interesting. Every so often, there's a tshuva in the Chasam Sofer that we don't know what in the world he's referring to. He doesn't explain everything in the tshuvas. If we would have had the letters of the Shoyl, we would realize probably they all correspond paragraph by paragraph, like this letter of the Chasam Sofer. This tshuva corresponds paragraph by paragraph to the letter of the Maritz Chayis. So the Maritz Chayis brought up an issue. How can you say that not breathing for 15, 20 minutes determines that a person is dead? And you base it on the Pasuk Kol Hashem Nishmas Ruach Chaim Biyapov, the Rambam in the Mor Nebuchadnezzar quotes from Galen. Galen was a Roman or a Greek doctor, I forgot already. And he wrote a book on medicine, and he writes that there was once a case in medical history that a person wasn't breathing for 3 days, and then he came to, after 3 days of not breathing, he came back to living normally. So the Maritz Chaya says, so you see that it's possible that a person should stop breathing for 3 days. So how can you bury him? How can the Chevra Kadisha bury a person if he stops breathing? 15, 20 minutes, maybe he's still alive, like the Maisu Shehoya that the Rambam quotes from Galen. So the Maritz Chaya says, nah, that happened once in a Yovel. Hardly ever happened, such a rare incident. And this story in the Ovel Rabbosi about the person who was buried by mistake, he was buried alive and he was knocking on the gates. They locked me in, let me get out of here. It happened one out of a million cases. That's not even called a suffix, sakonis nefosh. A suffix echad mini elef alfi alofim. The Gemara says, lehoch bebikoch nefosh sachar harayv. Whenever there's a suffix sakona, you always have to go lechumra. You always have to be mesupik. Maybe, even though the odds are that 1,000 to 1, that by going to the hospital on Shabbos, we're not going to save his life. He's going to die anyway. He was going to survive anyway, even if we go after Shabbos is over. But still, because there's one chance in 1,000 that you may save his life, so you do. But there's one chance in 1,000,000. That's a joke. That's not even called the suffix sakana. So that's what the Chasam Sefer responds. He says, true, Galen writes that once there was such a unusual case, a person stopped breathing. But that the Pasuk doesn't mean that that's the definition of life and death, breathing. Pasuk says that, he says, could be the Pasuk is an asmachta. And he says that, we have the right to go. It's a ruba de ruba. It's one chance in 1,000,000 that the fellow is still alive after not breathing for 20 minutes. The fact that he's not breathing, that's not the definition of life and death. That's a similar dove. He's probably dead. What is the definition of life and death? So that's a question. So that's what the Pashtus and the Psukim is, definition of life and death in different Gemaras and different Psukim, is blood circulation. The blood circulates the oxygen to the different cells of the body, and the oxygen keeps the cells alive. So the blood stops circulating, then the organism is dead. That's the Pashtus, a lot of Psukim like that. But it's not the breathing is not the definition of life and death. Breathing is a similar dove. And that same tshuva with the Chasam Sofer gives this response to the Maritz Chaya. He writes that the Tanoim didn't have traditions on medical issues from Moshe Rabbeinu. They followed the Goyish doctors of their generation. But as far as Kvuras Ameis, when the Rebbeinu Shlom told Moshe Rabbeinu, Kavutik Breda Bayamahu, he must have told them the guidelines. When do you have the right to assume the patient is dead? So he must have told them if he's not breathing for 20 minutes, then we have the right to assume. First, he was a goises and the body is cold. If the body is still warm, so then you don't bury him. If the body is cold and he stopped breathing for 20 minutes, we assume he's probably dead. I don't know, one of the younger Rabbanim, one of the Rabbanim in our generation put out a whole book about Hashkofa. So he wrote, anyone who says that the rabbis didn't have traditions on medicine, but Moshe Rabbeinu is an apikoros. So the Chasam Sofer was an apikoros. What? Chasam Sofer says like that in this famous tshuva. This tshuva is referred to by the Pischei Tshuva in Yerideya, the end of Yerideya.
Maybe isn't there also like a chirim of the Marashal that the Marashal says it's mamash usher to use It's usher to use some of. He put a chayim on people who used some of the medicines of Chazal, no?
Yeah, you have to follow the Tanaim. The Tanaim followed the doctors of their generation, so we have to follow the doctor of our generation, of course.
But the Maharshal says it's mamish usher. Like he said, he would put a chayim on people who would do so.
Yeah, the Gaonim say like that. Whoever follows the medicine in the Gemara is Dama Berosha. If he gets sick and he dies, it's his own stupid fault. You have to follow the doctors of your generation, yes? I would certainly assume so. So the Sam Rabbanan made such a whole fuss about this that if a person is not able to breathe on his own, he's only breathing because they put him on a ventilator, he's not considered alive because the definition of life is independent breathing. Where they come up, independent breathing. The whole thing is an asmachta. The Marsha, the Chasam Sofer says, whole thing was intended as an asmachta. It's not a yafus, it's not a gzeiras hakosef. Yeah.
Rabbi?
Yes.
What about brain death? What would that be?
The Pashto says that even after brain death, some of the vital organs are still being supplied with oxygen. So the person is Alpi Pashto still alive. Brain death, that's based on this assumption that a brain dead patient is not able to breathe independently. So even though he's on a ventilator and the oxygen is being distributed to all the different cells, keeping all the vital organs alive, but since he doesn't have independent breathing, so he's considered dead. Where did he come up with this din? Based on this pasuk, that's what the Chassam said. The pasuk was intended as an asmachta. It's a similar dover. It's not the definition of life. If a person is not breathing, if the body is cold, and he was goisei, saying the body is cold now, and he's not breathing for 20 minutes, then we assume that he's probably dead. We assume that the blood is no longer circulating.
But are there other contemporary poskim who agree with Rav Tendler that brain death is halachic death, or most assume not like him?
Yeah, there are some who think like that, yes. Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, after he passed away, Rabbi Neuwirth from the Shmir Shabbos Kolchosa delivered a hesped. He was very close to him in Kol Torah. He learned by him at Kol Torah. So he said the greatest aggravation that he had in his whole life from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was about the issue of brain death. That people were saying things in his name that he never said. So how can they put things in my, how can they say things in my name? I'm still alive. If I would die already, so then you can say in my name, whatever, I'm still alive. And I say, it's not true. I never said I believe in brain death. So he said that was the thing that caused the most aggravation to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, was the whole issue of the brain death. Chazal had a tradition that the Mabul did not affect Eretz Yisrael. There are no walls separating Eretz Yisrael from the rest of the world, but that's the tradition they had from the very beginning, from Sheshes Mei Breshes. When the Rabban Shalom created the world, we said over last week the Balamor and Rosh Hashanah Daf Chof and Beis, that Eretz Yisrael Gevoy Mikol HaRotzes in Yerushalayim Gevoy Mikol Eretz Yisrael means at the time of Brias HaOlam, what was on top? It doesn't mean that the Eretz Yisrael is the highest elevation above sea level in the whole wide world. It's just not true. The Swiss Alps are higher. And Yerushalayim is not the highest elevation in Eretz Yisrael. Ein Itim is taller, the Gemara says. David HaMelech wanted to build a Beis HaMikdash in Ein Itim because it's the tallest elevation above sea level. What it means is, when the Balamar interprets, what it means is when the Baal Shem created the world, Yerushalayim was on top. So that by Erev Vahivayker, the international dateline was 90 degrees to the east of Yerushalayim. So Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim played a role from day number one in the Brias HaOlam, and then in the Mabul also. According to the tradition of the Gemara and Sanhedrin, the Mabul did not affect Eretz Yisrael. In the end of the Sedra, you read that Terach decided to travel to Eretz Canaan. Why did he want to travel to Eretz Canaan? So the different Mefarshim and Chumash have different suggestions. So some say because Eretz Yisrael, the rest of the world was this, what had been destroyed a few generations earlier, 9 generations. Noach was the 10th generation from Adam Rishon, and Avram was the 10th generation from Noach. Asor Doris Minoach Lad Avram Avinu. So Terach was the father of Avram Avinu. So 9 generations earlier, there was a Mabul. The whole world was destroyed. There were dead bodies all over the place, and Eretz Yisrael was not affected by the Mabul. So maybe because he wanted to go to Eretz Nam because it was healthier, because it didn't suffer from the Mabul, or maybe because he realized that he was searching for Ruchnius, and he realized Eretz Yisrael must be something special from the fact that the Mabul didn't affect Eretz Yisrael. Maybe he was searching for Ruchnius. Whatever it was, he traveled from where he lived, and he went only to Haran. Originally, he planned to go to Eretz Canaan, but he only went to Haran. Vayomas Terach b'Haran. He stayed there. He didn't go any further. But Avraham Avinu went all the way. Avraham Avinu went. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, Lech Lecha Mi'artzecha, go to Eretz Canaan. It's interesting. Rashi in his commentary on Chumash quotes from the Medrash that the way the Chumash presents it, it sounds as if Vayomas Terach b'Haran, the end of Parshas Noach, and then after the father dies, after Terach dies, then Avraham Avinu gets the nevuah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the tzibur, to move to Eretz Yisrael. That's not the way it happened. If you read the dates, Avraham Avinu left his father behind when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him he should go to Eretz Canaan. He went and the father was still behind, and he violated Kibbut Aviyim. In fact, the Medrash has like that, Lech Lecha, I only give you permission to violate Kibbut Aviyim, and other people do not have permission to leave their father to violate Kibbut Aviyim. What exactly does that mean? So the Chaye Adam wrote a whole separate sefer, and in Yoni Eretz Yisrael, he writes in the introduction, he really wanted to move to Eretz Yisrael, but after he realized it's just not going to take place, it's just not going to happen, it was too difficult. So he wanted to write a whole sefer, a thin sefer about Hilchas Eretz Yisrael. So the last chapter in the sefer is, is it permissible for a person to move to Eretz Yisrael to leave his parents behind? If the parents would prefer that he should stay behind, so they'll see him, they'll see their grandchildren. So when he goes to Eretz Yisrael, he's in violation of Kibbut Aviyim, which takes precedence, that he should do the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael or fulfill the mitzvah of Kibbut Aviyim. So he interprets that medrash, Lech Lecha, I only give you permission to leave your father behind. And the Chumash covers up on Avraham Avinu, presents it as if Vayomas Terach Becharon, and only after Terach died, then Avraham Avinu leaves. That's not the way it happened. Really, Avraham Avinu left the father behind. That was the one exception to the rule, that he had the right to move to Eretz Yisrael, even though it would be in violation of the Kibbut Aviyim, and other people are not allowed to. That's what the Chaye Adam paskens based on that Medrash. Others interpret the Medrash differently, that Avraham Avinu was converted. He was Gershon his guy Kukot Nishan Allah Dami. So that's why, strictly speaking, there was no din of Kibbut Aviyim. Other people, there is a din of Kibbut Av, because there's no Kukot Nishan Allah Dami. Others interpret the Medrash differently. But that's how the Chaye Adam understood this Medrash.
Maybe. Yes. So how come Chazal say that Yaakov is Nenash on all those years that he went to go learn when he wasn't with his, it was Yaakov, no, that he was Nenash when he was away from his parents?
Like, yeah.
Something, so not, that implies
was not Nenash. All the years that he was learning in Yeshiva, he was not Nenash for the lack of Kibbut Aviyim, right? If you go to learn in the Yeshiva and you're not Mekayim Kibbut Aviyim, so then you're not Nenash for it. Yeah.
Didn't have to do something with the fact that Chazal said that Yosef was, he was punished with Yosef for those years that he wasn't being Mechabit his mother and father? No? Am I mixing? Chazal said that he wasn't Nenash all those years that he was in Shem
V'Yemer? For the 14 years that he learned in Yeshiva Shem V'Yemer, he was not Nenash. For the 22 years that he was making Parnassah, for that he was Nenash.
That's what it was. So those years he was Nenash on.
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Rabbi, were there people living in Eretz Yisrael at the time of the Mabul?
I don't know. Look, just like there are no walls separating Eretz Yisrael from the rest of the world and the water didn't reach there, could be the Mabul didn't affect the whole world. Could be there were not people living in the whole world. Could be only some of the countries where there were people living there. Could be the rest of the world was not affected. If the water didn't enter Eretz Yisrael, even though there are no walls, it could be the water didn't enter the rest of it, didn't even go the whole Middle East. We don't know the whole story.
And what was the reason Rabbi said Eretz Yisrael wasn't affected?
Because of the Hashivas of Eretz Yisrael. Apparently there were people living in Eretz Yisrael, but because of the Hashivas of Eretz Yisrael, the Gemara assumes that it was not affected. Yeah.
Don't we say the people living in Eretz Yisrael before were very corrupt?
Yes. I don't know, but still because of the Hashivas of Eretz Yisrael. I don't know.
Were the people affected?
That what?
Were the people affected? And maybe not just the arts.
I don't know.
Doesn't Gemara say that all of Chutz La'aretz is Tameh, Tumat Eretz Hamim?
Yes.
Isn't the assumption that the Mabul was on Chol Ha'aretz?
Yeah. I don't know.
I remember every one time in Shir said how it's apikorsis to say it didn't take over the entire world, because that's the Chazal believes that to be true.
No, they believe the story of the Mabul is true. Does it necessarily mean that every single inch of Chutz La'aretz? I don't know. You see, Eretz Yisrael versus Chutz La'aretz. Could be that not all of Chutz La'aretz was included also.
The Rebbe said if the entire Chutz La'aretz is Tameh, so the assumption is that...
Yeah. Based on the Mabul, based on the Meisei HaMabul. But it doesn't necessarily mean that every single inch of Chutz La'aretz had Meisei HaMabul there. Yeah. after the Mabul is all over, then the Pasuk reads, sounds like it says that during the period of the Mabul, the seasons were not functioning. Winter, summer, spring, and fall, everything was cockeyed. And the sun, the rising of the sun, setting of the sun, everything was cockeyed. And the Pasuk says after the Mabul was over, Kodesh Baruch will never bring another Mabul. He made a Shavua, and he said, Yom HaValayla lo yishbosu. Day and night and the seasons, such a thing will not happen again. That's the simple pshat. So the Gemara has an additional level of interpretation on the Pasuk. Yom HaValayla lo yishbosu means that a Nochri is not permitted to observe Shabbos any day of the week. Until then, apparently, a lot of people would observe Shabbos. They weren't mechuyev to, but they believed in the story of creation, and they would only work 6 days a week and rest on the seventh day to demonstrate the fact that they believe in the story of creation. And after the Mabul, there was such a corruption of human nature. Our observance of Shabbos is because, in a certain sense, we all created B'Tselem Elokim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu rested on the Shabbos, so our observance of Shabbos is in a certain sense a fulfillment of a halachta bidracha. So Kol Zman that the Ribbono Shel Olam didn't destroy mankind in the Mabul, so it made sense that human beings should volunteer to observe Shabbos as if they're fulfilling a halachta bidracha. But after the Mabul, that all the mankind was so deteriorated that there was such a lack of Tzelem Elokim, so from now on, the Torah has a din. Only the Jews have the Tzelem Elokim to the degree that it makes sense to observe Shabbos. The Nochem are not permitted to observe Shabbos, even if they'll observe on Sunday, even if they observe a different day of the week. They're not allowed to observe anything that has to do with Shabbos. So the Gemara has such a din. Nochi Shabbos is Chayiv Misa. Does mean it's Chayiv Misa B'dei Adam. Is Chayiv Misa B'dei Shamayim. A Nochri is not permitted to observe Shabbos. That was a big question. If a non-Jew is in the process of converting, let's say he ready, it's a man. So first you have the milah, and then you go to mikveh, you have the tefillah. But Molvel Oitovel, we paskin, is still a Nochri. They're both ma'akev, they're different opinions in the Tanoim and Yevamos and the Sugya of Geirus, and we paskin Molvel Oitovel is still a Nochri. So that's the question. What about Mol Valoy Toval? Is the candidate for conversion permitted to observe Shabbos? Because the original Geirus of Klal Yisrael, the Mila was in Mitzrayim before bringing Korban Pesach, and the Tfila was at the time of Maimon HaSinai, and the Mitzvah Shabbos was given in between the Mila and the Tfila. And the Jews did observe Shabbos. They were given Shabbos when the Mon was falling down. The Mon didn't come down on Shabbos. So maybe we should learn out from the story in the Midbar that Mol Valoy Toval is permitted to observe Shabbos. It's obligated to observe Shabbos. And that was a big machloikis years ago, Reb Shmuel Salant. For many generations, there were only Sephardim living in Eretz Yisrael. There were no Ashkenazim. And then in the early 1800s, the Talmidim of the Gra moved to Eretz Yisrael. Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov moved. They both were taught by the Gra and the Baal Shem Tov that if they'll move to Eretz Yisrael, this will hasten the coming of Mashiach. So they both started to move to Eretz Yisrael. So then these were Ashkenazim. So they had to organize a badatz, a bezin for the Ashkenazim. So the late 1800s, the head of the badatz was Rav Shmuel Salant. He was getting old, so he recommended that they should hire an assistant rabbi to take over when he'll have to retire. So there was a whole pilpul who should come. So there was a period of time that Rav Shmuel Salant was traveling in Europe and to raise money for the Kehillah, I think. And he had a shtickle, an assistant rabbi. I think his name was Rav Moshe Lemel. And he was the acting rabbi in Yerushalayim when Rav Shmuel Salant was traveling in Europe. So on Shabbos afternoon, there was a non-Jew who was in the process of Geirus and already had a bris milah, but he didn't go to the mikveh yet. Have to wait till the bris milah heals. It's a surgery. Have to wait till it heals before you go to the mikveh. So, and he was observing Shabbos. So Rabbi Moshe Lemel told him he has to be mechal Shabbos. He's not allowed to observe Shabbos. So he made him sign his name on a piece of paper. So there was a big machlokes after that, whether he did right or wrong. I think they quote from Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnethal, if I'm not mistaken. His opinion was that when a ger is mol and later on tovel, a few weeks later tovel, it's a gloy milsalem afreya that he was Jewish from the time that he was mol. So not only is he permitted to observe Shabbos, he's not allowed to be mechallel Shabbos. He has to observe Shabbos from the time that he's mol if he plans to be tovel. Has to listen to Mikra Megillah, has to do all the mitzvahs if he plans to be Toiva later, so the Tefillah is going to make him into a Ger Melam Afreya. That's a very strange, in my opinion, it's a very strange suggestion. How do you have something work retroactively? How can the Tefillah later make him into a Ger Lim Afreya? Very strange. But it was a big machlokes at that time. I remember about 30, 40 years ago when they first founded the Lakewood Kollel in Chicago. So the Rabbanim there put together a small pamphlet, soft-covered pamphlet, a collection of all of the tshuvas on that topic that were written at that time, about a ger shel mol v'lo tovel, whether he's allowed to observe Shabbos or not. So that was a hot point of debate.
I mean, also, isn't there a spell also to say that since he's keeping it in order to learn it, so that wouldn't be an issue either?
The Rambam holds that a Nochri Sheshavas Chayv Misa because he's not allowed to make a new religion. But if he's observing some of the mitzvahs as part of the Jewish religion, he's not founding a new religion. According to the Rambam, it would be permissible. But the other poskim don't hold from that Rambam because they quote the passage from the Zohar commenting on the pasuk Bnei Yisrael Oisi Li'olam, that Shabbos is a unique, the day on which there's a unique relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Bnei Yisrael. And the Zohar gives a mashal amad avadoyma that the maid in the royal palace has the keys to all the rooms, including the bedroom of the king and the queen. But the maid has to know not to go in when the king and the queen are together in bed. If the maid is going to open up the door and come in, the king is going to behead her. He's going to kill her. So on Shabbos, there's a special relationship between Bnei Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Bnei Yisrael, Oisei Li'olam. And if the Nochi barges in, he's Chayv Misa, like the maid barging in. Anochi Sheshavas is a separate Isa. So the Zohar doesn't understand like the Rambam. Rambam understands that it's a general din. A guy is not allowed to make up his own religion. He should observe the Shevet Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, or should he convert to become Jewish, or should he can volunteer to observe some of the Jewish Mitzvahs. But he's not supposed to, Shaloye Chadish Das, Me'atzman, shouldn't found a new religion. That's how the Rambam understood it. But the Zohar does not understand it like that. At the end.
The Aruch Lener, that's what said that there's like an in between stage and he could.
Right, also wrote a tshuva. He was one of those who wrote a tshuva on the topic. Molval et Toval, right. Are you permitted to observe Shabbos? Right. Quite a few tshuvas were written.
I mean, so lahalacha, when Rabbi is involved, has done like gerut before in conversions. So like even as the ger is learning to keep Shabbat, Rabbi will tell them to be mechal Shabbat on one thing every time.
Yeah, that's the common position. Not like the Rambam. Yeah. At the end of the sedra. It says Shafech Dam Ha'adam Ba'adam Dam Yishafech Ki Mitzel Malkim Bara Asa Adam. So why is that repeated? That was already told to Adam Arishon, the din of Shvichas Damim. So the Mefarshim explained, because the Tzel Malkim was so weakened, Baharai, that HaKadosh Baruch had to destroy all of mankind. So one might have thought that just like it doesn't make sense for the Nochi Shabbos anymore, because observing Shabbos is like V'halachta B'drachma, HaKadosh Baruch observed Shabbos. So mankind had such a low level of Tzelem Elokim that it didn't make sense. So the Ribbono Shel Olam said, from now on, it doesn't make sense that anybody should volunteer to observe Shabbos. So one might have thought that there's no Issa Shvichas Dam, and there's no Issa Ritzicha, because mankind doesn't have the same Tzelem Elokim degree that it used to have. So that's why the Ribbono Shel Olam had to repeat the prohibition of Shvichas Dam. And that pasuk, it says also, "Achaz dimchem l'nafshesechem edrosh," that not only are you not permitted to murder anybody else, you're not permitted to commit suicide. Now, in the middle of the whole presidential election politics and everything, So they keep on talking about abortion, that it's the woman's body. The woman has the right to do whatever she wants with her body. We believe, it's not my body. The body belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. My soul belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A person is not a balabos on his own body. He's not allowed to kill him, not allowed to take his life. He's not allowed to make himself get sick either. He's a shomer on the pikudin. We are all shomerim on the pikudin. The body belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The woman is not a balabos to decide to take her own life, let alone to take the life of the fetus. That's not permissible. At the end of the Sedra, you have the story of the Migdal Bovel, which is very, very unclear exactly what Avera had they violated. Why were they punished? Was it a punishment? So there's a long drasha in the Sefer Drasha Saran, which they think is really by the regular Ran, the Ran on the Rif. Same thing, they have a Pirush Aran Alatar also. They think that that's also, they're pretty sure that that's also by the Ran on the Rif. So the Ran has a famous drasha where he just quotes the Mishnah in Sanhedrin. Kines litzadikin tov lahem etov lo'olam. Kines lirushayim ra lahem ra lo'olam. When you have a United Nations, is that a good thing or a bad thing? So if you have a United Nations and all the nations are tzadikim, then it's tov lahem etov lo'olam. Then wonderful things will come out. They'll all encourage each other, mechazik each other to do good things. But if you have kines lirushayim, so then they may decide not to let Avraham Avinu believe in monotheism. They're all of the Avodah Zarah. They won't allow any freedom of religion. They won't allow the Jews. We live in America. We appreciate the fact that there's freedom of religion for so many generations. The Jews lived in different countries in Europe, and they were harassed because of the fact that they didn't worship Avodah Zarah. They didn't believe in Christianity, or they didn't believe in Islam, or whatever it was. So we appreciate the fact that there's freedom of religion, but if you're going to have Kinas L'Rishayim, is going to be Ralehem Ralehem. They didn't really do anything wrong. That's how some of Farshim say, the Ran. They didn't really do anything wrong. It was just Kinas L'Rishayim was Ralehem Ralehem. So the Baruch Shalom felt he has to knock down the Kinas. Rashi quotes the Medrash that they decided to rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They wanted to build the city, and they wanted to build a Migdal Berosh HaBashamayim to go up to heaven and to rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Where did that come from? Where did that idea come from? So Rashi quotes, when I was a Talmud in the yeshiva, and the Mashgiach was Rav Lessen, he was from Slabodka. So he would, every year, he would say over certain ideas. So we'd always say over this idea, Vayera Hashem Liris Asa Migdal Shabon B'nei HaAdam. So Rashi quotes in the Medrash, what do you mean Shabon B'nei HaAdam? That the human beings had created the Migdal, Rosh HaBashamayim. Was it then B'nei HaMarim? Of course the B'nei HaAdam who make the Migdal. So it means the descendants of Adam Arishan. Doesn't mean the human beings. The descendants of Adam Arishan. Why? Because Adam Arishan was a kofli toiva. HaKadosh Baruch Hu confronts him after he ate from the Eitz Hadas, and he says, why did you sin? So he says, it's your fault. You gave me Chava. Instead of expressing HaKadosh HaTov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they're giving him a wonderful, good-looking wife. So he says, it's your fault that you gave me this witch of a wife, and she's the one who had me eat from the Eitz Hadas. So because the Marishim was a kofei taiva, that's why I led to Apikursis later, and that's why they wanted to make a migdal berosh HaBashamayim to rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The thing that Mechazik maintains our emun in HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the midah taiva of HaKoras HaTov. We should recognize the fact that we owe a debt of gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He created us, and we're still alive, and we're healthy, and we're functioning. So that's mechazik de'emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If a person is lacking the midah of HaKoras HaTov, he's going to easily forget about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a kel mistat. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is invisible, and he hides. He goes out of his way to hide, that people shouldn't see him. So because Shabbat and B'nai Adam, because Adam Arishan was a kofet taiva, that's why generations later this had an effect. And then in the generation of the Dor HaFloga, they were murdered against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's such a medrash about Paro also. It says, what do you mean, lo yada es yosef? He didn't know history. The people who are born today, they never heard of President Roosevelt, never heard of President Truman, never heard of President Eisenhower. They don't know what happened before. They never heard of what happened. How can it be? Shalai des yes means they had no hakara sataif to the Jewish people. Yosef had saved the whole Middle East at that time, so he should have a debt of hakara sataif to the Jews. So because of Shalai des yes, because he had no sense of hakara sataif to Abbas of Adam, that's why it says lo yadayti yes Hashem, the same lashon. Lo yadayti yes Yosef, so the Medrash says that's why when Moshe Rabbeinu comes with a nevuah, he says, HaKadosh Baruch appeared to me, and he says, I should deliver a message to you. Shalach HaSamei V'Yabduni, let the Jewish people go free. So he says, Lo Yadayti Es Hashem, Gam Yisrael Lo Yashaleach. I never heard of Hashem. He doesn't believe in Hashem. The, having a sense of HaKoros HaTov is what's Mechazek Gar Emuna in Metzias Hashem. Midas Tovus in general, Chazon Ish has in his essay Emuna Bitochem that was printed after he passed away, a beautiful style Hebrew, beautiful essay. So he says that Midas Tovus Bechlal help a person think. Sometimes there's a Dakas Dikas Svara in learning, so if a person is not a Baal Midas, he won't think of that Svara Daka. Sometimes as far as two daka, so it's a dakman adak, so it's ridiculous. But sometimes it's a good svara, but it's a svara daka. So only one who has midas tavus will appreciate this svara. Okay, these are some of the ideas that I learned that from Parshas Nach. We should all be nitzol from the mabul of our generation. Okay, everyone should have a good Shabbos.
Shabbos.
Good.